Hi, everybody. Today is Monday, July 21st, 2025, and our friend Paul Craig Roberts is back with us. Welcome.
Thank you, Nima. Thank you.
Well, I want to start with what Matt Gaetz said about the sort of relationship between the United States and Israel. Here is what he said.
To some who aren't intelligent enough to speak about these issues with nuance, simply say that any criticism of the government of Israel is anti-Semitic. That's stupid people talk. It isn't anti-Semitic to criticize the government of Israel any more than it isn't anti-American to say that Biden's presidency was a silver alert. It seems Israel's goodwill with the world has eroded very meaningfully. Christians blocked from the United States, Americans murdered in Judea and Samaria. We don't think it's a tenable position for Israel to say to our fellow countrymen, send us your money, send us your weapons, but don't send us your Christian tour groups or Arab Americans who want to visit family without being beaten to death.
Your take, Paul, on what's going on in Palestine. And we know that the American ambassador, Mike Huckabee, went to the West Bank to talk with Christians there. Your take on what's going on?
Well, we know what's going on. There's a genocide fully supported by the United States government, fully supported by President Trump, who sends the money, the weapons, and provides the diplomatic protection. So that's what's going on. The Palestinians are being exterminated. The whole world knows that. I was surprised that Matt Gaetz would be so forthcoming in describing the situation with Israel. Of course, he's no longer in office. If he was, he'd be turned out in the next election because it's impossible to be a member of the United States government and criticize Israel in any way and remain in the government. It's never happened. The only two members currently of the House of Representatives that are critical of Israel, and one of them is Marjorie Taylor Greene, who introduced into legislation a bill canceling all military aid to Israel. She says, why are we giving them military aid when they have nuclear weapons? What do they need military aid for? Well, I suspect she won't be there after the next election. And the other one, it's named Mathis, Senator Mathis, I forget his name. He's the one who refused having an Israeli babysitter.
Thomas Massey.
He's a brave character. He like Marjorie Taylor Greene and like Matt Gaetz, he's a brave character. He refused to have an Israeli babysitter to tell him how to vote on every bill that came up in Congress. Well, that's two people out of 500 and something. The rest of them are two-bit puppets. You know, they give a mass murderer 53 standing ovations in the middle of him conducting a genocide. So that's the situation. The United States has zero independence of Israel. They have worked very hard and successfully to align American foreign policy, especially in the Middle East, totally with Israel. So we have a foreign policy in the Middle East, which is exactly the same as Israel's. And we do everything we're told to do. We, in the 21st century, we've fought a whole bunch of wars for Israel. We've destroyed five countries we destroyed because Israel said it's in the way of greater Israel. And they're our enemies and they're going to get us. And so go get them for us. So just think about it. You know, it's Americans dying for Israel and Americans funding greater Israel. You know, we of course were told it's a war on terror. I mean, what a joke. Or we're We're bringing them democracy. I mean, what a joke. Where's the democracy? Syria's in chaos. Libya's in chaos. Iraq is ruined. Somalia, Sudan, Lebanon. And now the Israeli at work are at work getting us to destroy Iran. So who will be next? Saudi Arabia, Turkey. It's kind of pathetic that Americans think that they're a great, powerful country when they're led around with a ring through their nose by Netanyahu. They're pathetic. They're pathetic people, and they're brainwashed. They think that it's God's demand on America to do whatever Israel wants. They go to churches. They listen to this nonsense from preachers. It's unbelievable. So I think it's hopeless. I was in hope, as I think we discussed in earlier conversations, that Trump would break loose from this, and that he would replace a greater Israel with an American colonial empire in the Middle East. And I thought he might do that when he declared that Gaza was America's possession. So but that seems to have gone by the wayside. So that's that. I don't know whether the Israelis will succeed in having us use nuclear weapons against Iran or not. You know, it all ties in with Epstein. Epstein. It's, I think, certain, and I think the evidence is substantial, without anything being released, that Mossad was that Epstein was a Mossad spy. He was financed by Israel. That's where all that money came from, to get islands and the fancy place in New York and the other places. A math teacher doesn't make the money and then become a billionaire or a multi-billionaire. So he was financed by Israel. I think that's completely clear. His job was not to sex traffic kids. It was to use attractive underaged kids as a honey trap to be able to blackmail important American political leaders, industry leaders, anyone who could help conform American foreign policy to Israel's. And so that's what it is. You know, they try to disguise that by saying, "Oh, he was a sex trafficker." Well, why was he a sex trafficker? He's already set up with billions of dollars by the Israelis. He doesn't need to make money trafficking kids. His job is to use largely willing underage kids who are probably flattered to be having sex with celebrities and important people. You know, this is always a known feature that, oh, some young woman, this very important person, they're flattered. If you look at Virginia, what's her name? Virginia Guffrey, the 17-year-old girl they've made such a fuss about being with the British prince. She seems to be just very happy. She's proud. She's been in bed with the Prince of England. What's that to be ashamed of? I mean, women don't get ashamed of that sort of thing. And she clearly wasn't coerced. I don't know the story, it hasn't come out. Some of the kids may have been coerced, but it seems to have been largely a voluntary thing. That's what it looks like. It's later in life, you know, 10, 20 years later, 30, I don't know how long. And they realize there's money in it and notoriety in it, that they come up with the charges. They weren't made at the time. So if this is actually the case, then Netanyahu has all kinds of blackmail information over all sorts of important American people. And right now, the Democrats, with Russiagate having blown up in their faces, now with this information that Tulsi Gabbard has forwarded to the Department of Justice for prosecution, prosecution of who? President Obama, Comey, the head of the CIA, Clapper, the head of Homeland Security, the FBI guy, some of the people on the National Security Council. Well, that's blown up the Democrats' faces. I don't think these things will go through because the ruling establishment isn't going to allow it. But it's embarrassing that the Director of National Intelligence says, I forwarded documents showing the implication of the President of the United States and his high officials in treason against a sitting president. She said the documents show that they intentionally falsified evidence that they could use to destroy Trump. Well, this is high treason. It carries a death sentence. The President Obama faces that if there's any justice, which I doubt. So if you look at this power that Netanyahu has from the many years of Epstein running this honey trap, who's not in it? How many people aren't in it? So how does the United States get free of Israel and its leadership class? It can be blackmailed by the Prime Minister of Israel. They can't get free. So in a way, Matt Gaetz is pissing in the wind. He's brave, but nothing can come of it. And certainly the Congress is not going to cut military aid to Israel because Marjorie Taylor Greene puts it in a bill. So that's the situation. I would say that the United States is not an independent country. It's a colony. And its foreign policy must conform with Israel's, at least in the Middle East. And the United States, not just the federal levels, especially at state levels, even red states like Texas and Florida, have laws that if you criticize Israel, you cannot do business with the state. You can't have a contract with the state to supply any service or goods. You can't work for the state. So this shows enormous power of the Israel lobby. It's an extraordinary thing. You cannot, in Florida, in Texas, you cannot criticize Israel. So if you say it's a genocide and you're opposed to it, you can't have a state contract. Well, have we ever seen this kind of power before? Where? Maybe the Stalin period, the Soviet Union, you couldn't criticize Stalin. Where else? So that's, I think, an extremely serious situation. What Americans need to understand, name everybody needs to understand, that the men in black, which is one of the terms used for the deep state, the ruling elite, the globalists. The men in black, these are the powerful private lobbies, the most powerful being the military security complex and the Israel lobby. But there are other powerful ones, big pharma, agribusiness, you see, and at local level, state and local levels, the real estate developers. These are powerful interests, and they can block anything that they think adversely affects them. We saw with Trump, remember the tariffs, all the tariffs. Well, most of the things on the list were exempted because the American men in black said, no, we need those things. You can't do that. So the list is empty. It's just full of exemptions. We see it with the deportations. He was going to deport all these people. Oh, but we've exempted restaurant workers, farm workers, chicken slaughterhouse workers. Because why? Because agribusiness said you're not taking away our workforce. So those are the constraints on the president. It's not the Bilderbergs and the Rockefellers and the Rothschild calling him up, telling him what to do. It's the organized interest groups who are adversely affected by the policies. They're more powerful than the president. We saw recently, I watched an interview just the other day of the recent British Prime Minister, Liz Truss. You know, she didn't last very long because the establishment didn't approve of her and they removed her really quick. Really, I'm sure the Democrats are jealous that they couldn't get Trump out that quick. And she said just what I've told you, that these established interests are far more powerful than the British Prime Minister. She couldn't do anything. The Parliament wouldn't support her because they were afraid to death of the established interest, and they got her right out. Well, this is the way it is in the Western world. The people think, oh, Trump's going to do this, he's going to do that. He probably intended to, but he found out he's not permitted. And if he persists, what's going to happen? The lobby groups are going to go to work on the rhinos. And they're going to get enough rhinos to vote with the Democrats, and they'll impeach him. And the same thing will happen in the Senate. And they'll convict him. And then they'll prosecute him. I think I've posted today a link to the interview, the former British Prime Minister. This was 19, sorry, this was 2023. This was 2 years ago. 2 years ago, the British Prime Minister says, I couldn't do anything. They wouldn't let me. The men in black are far more powerful than the Prime Minister of England. And of course, the Prime Minister is a more powerful post than the President. So, you see, the Prime Minister is elected by the Parliament, the ruling party. They don't have to worry about people. But the parliament, the elected, wouldn't support her. They were scared to death. Oh God, we'll get on the wrong side of the real powers, which aren't in the government. This must shock people. You know, they've been brought up on all this civics nonsense about democracy and people controlling and voting and blah, blah, blah. And then they all get mad. The president's promised things and they don't deliver. And they say, oh, they all just lied to us. Well, they can't deliver. I think Trump's tried. I think he tried. But he's not permitted. And he doesn't have this kind of independent support that would let him go against these interest groups. It would take an independent Congress. They're not independent. They're dependent on the money from the interest groups. So they can't go against them. So this is the real situation in the United States. This I've told the truth. And if you don't believe me, listen to Liz Truss. She's being interviewed in Hungary. She had to go to Hungary to get an interview. The prime minister, the former prime minister of Great Britain, she can't be interviewed in London. She's got to go to Hungary. It's a short interview, 12, 13 minutes. And but
That's
you'll,
quite telling.
it's all it took. I've talked that long answering your question. It just shows how much more efficient she was with words than I am. And extremely clear, probably much clearer than I've been. So really, I should have just read her statements and not gone on myself. It would have been a better answer.
Paul, do you, besides George H.W. Bush and Reagan, they have decided to somehow warn Israel. But do you see any other president in the current, in the recent years that who were willing to somehow being tough to what Israel is asking for?
No, see, Reagan was before Epstein, so Mossad and the Israeli government didn't have all the dirt on everybody that they created with the underaged sexual attractions. George W. Bush, his administration was totally run by the Zionist neoconservatives, most of whom were dual
No, I was
Israeli.
talking to H.W. Bush, not George
Oh,
Bush.
okay. Yeah. Well, no, yes. I think George Herbert Walker Bush, former CIA director before he was president, and Jim Baker from Texas, I think they, like Trump, were not really, they were for different reasons. Trump is personality, but them, they were part of a class, a power class, and they weren't prepared to genuflect to Israel or anybody else. They were the sort of the last of the, not that they were necessarily a wasp, but they were the last of the ethnic American ruling class. And they weren't prepared to kowtow to Israel. I think, and Jimmy Carter wasn't prepared to. Israel got away with a lot during the Cold War because the Soviets were in the Middle East trying to get allies. And Israel was our country in the Middle East, and we so it became in the minds of the foreign policy establishment that Israel was kind of a cornerstone of our Middle East policy. And what Israel did over the years was turn Israel into turn the United States into a kind of a foundation stone of their foreign policy. They switched it on us. I think the last president who was really tough with Israel, he was also tough with the French and the British, was Eisenhower. He made them, they invaded Egypt to take back the Suez Canal, and he made them get out. He said, "Get out." He made Israel leave, and the British and the French leave, and said, "You're not taking this canal. It's Egypt's." And he was the last one. Look, even by 1967, Israel had such control that when they attacked the USS Liberty and caused over 200 American casualties, President Lyndon Johnson prevented the American Navy from going to the rescue of the USS Liberty. So that was 67. So you see, and Johnson clearly was kowtowing to Israel, maybe because he thought it was essential to our Cold War policy. That would be a different reason than for why Israel was kowtowed to today. There are these things. There are these things everywhere for years. The CIA used to complain strongly that Israel was spying on us more than the Soviet Union, but nothing was ever done about it. So, and there used to be a lot of animosity in the CIA against Israel. But this was, years ago. Those people are probably all dead, or at least retired. So I don't, if Epstein was running a honey trap, as long as the people caught in that honey trap are still prominent, Israel has tremendous leverage over Washington. If these people lose their prominence or die off or become irrelevant, then we might be able to break loose. But right now, they have such a complete blackmail hole. Look, we've had two presidents that were on the Lolita Express to the island. This doesn't. They're not going there to see the island or have tea with Epstein. So it's a serious situation. We can't act independently in the Middle East and or other places if we get if our action gets in Israel's way.
Paul, looking at the economy of Israel today, do you feel that the other day we've learned that Yemenis, the way that they're attacking the Eilat port and Ben Gurion airport and all of this, they're literally shutting down the Eilat port, which is so much it's so much important for Israel and the economy of Israel. How long Israel can continue this attitude in the Middle East, in your opinion, and how is that going to influence their economy in a long run? Without the United States, can they survive without the United States? And why they're doing everything to be more dependent on the United States than be less dependent? Because if you're smart, you want to be less dependent on other countries, but it doesn't seem that would be the case for Israel.
Well, if they were did not have American support, they would have been finished a long time ago. They wouldn't be there. It's just the American diplomatic, financial, and military power that Israel owes its success to, and the fact that we were willing to turn a blind eye to their crimes against humanity. I mean, now they've been stealing Palestine since 1947, a little bit at a time. Two steps forward, one step back. Two steps forward, complaints. One step back. Two steps forward. So the country, really, it's not there. Palestine's not there. It's just not there. The West Bank's not there. What was the West Bank now? A few little independent villages. You can't even travel between them without going through Israeli control points. So they and they've learned now, even though their only real remaining enemy is Iran, and Iran is not aggressive toward them, that they're not very powerful. Iran taught them a lesson, scared them to death. I mean, if Iran had continued, I think they would have destroyed Israel. And it may prove to have been a serious mistake of Iran not to go ahead and destroy them. because Israel will figure out how to destroy Iran, and they'll be using us. Now, the reason, one another reason I think that the Epstein connection is very valuable to Israel because of the blackmail material they accumulated, is that Netanyahu came here recently, third time in 6 months, to meet with Trump in the White House, and everyone thought it was about Iran. And yet we've not heard a word about what they discussed. There was no press conference, there's no report, there's no, the media is uninterested. It's almost like the meeting didn't take place. The media is not saying, hey, what'd you guys talk about? So obviously it wasn't Iran. I think Netanyahu told him, cut this Epstein stuff, stop it. We don't want it coming out that he was our agent. And you don't either. Well, now we see the Democrats using it against Trump. As I said, they ran out of Russiagate. So now the fact that first they were going to release everything, and then they announced there's nothing to release. And now Trump supporters basically forced him to say, well, we'll release the court documents if the court will let us. And now there's a controversy that the Democrat Senator Durbin has sent this long letter to the FBI demanding answers to how come there are 1,000 FBI agents going through those files and taking out every reference to Trump. Well, that's what the senators claim. We don't know if 1,000 FBI agents are doing that or not. But clearly, they have found another way to attack Trump, and that is that he prevented the release of the files because he's implicated and sexual activity with underaged kids. So this will be another Russiagate. If they possibly can, they'll turn this into another Russiagate, and it will and if nothing is ever released or anything substantial, then half of Trump supporters will write him off because they're more interested in these purient things, sex, than they are in the real important things. Now, people might say, well, sex with kids is very important too. Well, think about it a minute. When I was in high school in the 1950s, the age of female consent to sex was 14 years old. Virginia Guffrey was 17. The 1950s, a lot of girls 17 years old were getting married. So it's all, and if they're coerced, then that is anyone who's coerced of any age, that's criminal. But were they coerced? How? Why? I don't want to say it's not important, but it's distracting from things like, are we going to have a nuclear war? What's the most important? Can we get free of Israel's influence? What can we do about assimilating the millions of people who come in here and have established their own communities outside of America's communities? The real kinds of problems, these, not that it's not real, not that using kids in Honey Trap is permissible. It's not. But it gets the attention away from things that are life or death. And it shows that the American people really just don't have much judgment.
Paul, here is what Lindsey Graham said about putting pressure on Brazil, China, and India.
China, India, and Brazil. If you keep buying cheap Russian oil to allow this war to continue, we're going to tariff the hell out of you, and we're going to crush your economy, because what you're doing is blood money. You're buying cheap Russian oil at the expense of the world, and President Trump is tired of this game. If I were President Putin, I would get to the table soon, because he's about to get crushed.
Blunt and plain.
It seems that he genuinely believes that he can somehow put pressure or convince these countries not to trade with Russia.
You know, that senator, he's a bloody fool. I mean, a complete moron. First of all, why shouldn't countries buy the cheapest energy they can get? Are they supposed to hurt their own populations by buying the most expensive energy? What would happen to them? Second, all of these threats from Trump and bird brains like that senator, all of these threats, all they do is alienate more large, powerful countries against the United States. Do you think China and India and whoever the other country was going on about?
Brazil.
I think now, hell, these are three of the biggest countries in the world. The first, I mean, they are massive countries. Are they going to sit there and quake in their boots and say, oh my God, they're going to say, what is this fool making an enemy of us for? He wants us to punish our people to help him punish Putin? Well, you mean he's not big enough to punish Putin by himself? He has to use us? It creates an image of weakness for the United States. It also shows the United States is devoid of any diplomacy. It's just threats, coercion, threats, coercion. This is not an agreement. Agreements are mutual. People have to make them because they serve one another, each other, each benefits. Well, Trump has done nothing whatsoever to sit down with Putin and see what the situation is and how they can resolve it. He passes it off to Zelensky. This is America's war, not Zelensky's. Zelensky can't resolve it. It has to be between Trump and Putin. And Putin has said over and over and over, we're really not interested in negotiating an end to the war. What we want to do is to negotiate an end to the root cause of the war, which is the absence of a mutual security agreement between Russia and the West. And so let's sit down and work out a mutual security agreement. And when we have that, the war's over. Well, he gets no response. Done. It's almost either Trump doesn't know what, either, not just Trump, either the entire United States and Western governments haven't the foggiest idea of what Putin is saying, or they don't want to hear it. There's no other explanation. So what is the extraordinary animosity in Washington and London and Germany and France against a mutual security agreement? How does it hurt the West? It hurts the military security complex. The enemy goes away. All the enemy goes away. The budget dwindles. The power dwindles. They're not, their men in black aren't so important when they call on senators and congressmen and presidents. And so we can't have a mutual security agreement because it will hurt the power of the military security complex. That's the only reason. There's no other reason. That's the reason. So once again, what you brought us to, Nima, you've shown us, or your question, you brought it out for me, that once again, the private interests are far more powerful than the government. And so people have got to start learning who to blame. Do you blame the powerless senator, the powerless congressman, the semi-powerless president, or do you blame the men in black who have imposed their power on them? Well, that's who you blame. I mean, we're run by the Israel lobby, the military security complex lobby, the agribusiness lobby, big pharma lobby, and so on. And that's where the power is, and that's why we can't do anything. We've seen it. Robert Kennedy can't do the things that he knows needs to be done because Big Pharma won't let him, and they're more powerful. And Trump can't deport anybody because agribusiness won't let him, and they're more powerful. So people have to learn where the real power is and why the government is dysfunctional. They all blame the government. Oh, the Congress. Oh, the senator. Well, the reason is the Supreme Court let money into politics. That Supreme Court ruling allows corporations to purchase the government. It's legal in the United States for corporations to buy the government. So that's why nothing can be done. That Supreme Court ruling would have to be overturned. Money would have to be taken out of politics. Can that be done? These are the real things. And everybody's off on some period interest. I can tell you, this is actually in print somewhere in the Washington Times. It's in print in the Washington Times. It was written by a female journalist in Washington. She's been there for years. She was well known. She was a little too conservative for the Washington Post, and she ended up in the Washington Times, which was a conservative paper. I don't know if it still exists, but for a while it was there. And she wrote an article one day about the Women's Journalism Club in those days. The Women's Journalism Club would meet, and they were always plotting somehow to get more positions, more power, more visibility in the media, you know, because in their mind, and it may have been true, it was dominated by men. The men were the anchors. Those were the high-paying jobs, the news anchors. So they wanted to be anchors. So they had this club, and they would meet, and there was a restaurant over by Capitol Hill, which they would use for that. They'd meet and talk and plot their advancements. And she was talking about the competitiveness among the women, how the women were so competitive against one another, they couldn't hardly achieve their group goal. They couldn't stay together because if there was an opening, everyone wanted it. And so it tended to make the group fall apart. fighting among themselves. She explained all this, and it made a lot of sense. She was not running people down. She was explaining, how hard it was to be a female journalist and get anywhere. And the reason I'm telling you all this is to lay the foundation. She said they would go to any lengths to compete, even to proudly announcing shameful things. And she says, let me give you an example. She didn't use the name, but it was one of the blonde bombshells who was later one of the big anchors. And she's a young, beautiful looking blonde woman. And the meeting started and she's not there. And she walks in, she's all disheveled and smeared lipstick. She walks in and announces in a loud voice, I've just come from the bed of the president. This was during the John F. Kennedy years. She said, every eye in the room turned green. She had one-upped them all. Well, now, if this is the way it is, then why is Virginia Guffrey ashamed? And so what I'm harping on here is they've got this whole thing off focus. It was a spy operation. And whatever damage it did to kids, it certainly damaged the United States because it put us under the thumb of Netanyahu. And that's the real Epstein story, not sex trafficking. It was a spy operation. And people have to get their minds on to the real thing. Now, if you add the power that the Israelis have because of a long-term spy operation with the men in black and all the organized lobbies, you can see how weak the government is. I mean, it's really not debatable. How can you have a strong government committed to American national interests, to the public interest, when you've got lobbies that can block you at every point, and Israel sitting there with blackmail information that can ruin any and every member of your ruling elite. So this is my answer to your question. It took a long time, but people don't know these things. And so you have to kind of explain it and lay it out. And if anyone doubts my story, if they have access to newspaper morgues, they can find this article, because she was a regular columnist in the Washington Times. And this was probably in the mid to late 80s. It could possibly have been in the 90s. But once you find her name, because there won't be all that many female columnists, and you run a search on her articles, you'll find this article, which she says. The beautiful blonde journalist walks in and announces, I've just come from the bed of the president. And this is the greatest put down of all time for the Washington female journalist.
Thank you so much, Paul, for being with us today. Great pleasure as always.
Okay. You're welcome.
Have a great time there, Paul.
Thank you, Nemo. Send me the URL.
Yeah, I'm going to send it right away. See you soon. Bye-bye.